I'm talking to Neville Wiltshire again for the second time. I spoke to you already about the Jacobs factory story, but Neville, I'm talking to you now about the Clondalkin paper mills. What years were you in Clondalkin paper mills?
I was in Clondalkin paper mills, I think, off the top of my head, from about October 1974 to probably late 1978.
So you worked in Jacobs first, before you went to the paper mills.
Yes.
Why did you make that decision? Why did you switch over?
Well, one of the reasons was that in Jacobs I had moved from my original career, which was in personnel and training, into production. I didn't see a future for me in production in Jacobs. I wanted to get back into personnel. I went to a smaller company, first of all, as a personnel manager. And for various reasons, it didn't work out. And I found myself very shortly again on the labour market and got into Clondalkin Paper Mills as training manager, where I would have been well known in business circles as one of the well qualified and experienced training managers in Dublin at the time, because not many big companies had training departments, but Jacobs had.
What were your first impressions of the paper mills when you went in?
The first impression of the paper mill when I went in was that making paper wasn't all that different from making biscuits. Because you made a mix of stuff and you cooked it and you packed it and you sent it out. Just happened that one was dough going into biscuits, the other was wood chip and various chemicals going into paper mush that was turned into sheets of paper. And then it was packed and sent out. So it was a manufacturing process. And it was a very heavy, dirty, noisy, smelly manufacturing process.
And so where exactly did you work in the factory?
I worked as training manager in an office up above the paper mill itself, which got very hot in the summer. And once you walked outside your door, it was very noisy. Now, what I did find when I went there, because of legislation that was coming in, which was, some people would say, inflicting organised training on industry in Ireland, there were grants available and a levy grant system that was in, and if the company didn't fulfil certain obligations within that scheme, they didn't get their grant back. They paid in a levy, and they got it back as a grant, which meant if they did a certain amount of proper training. Mm-hmm. It was very big in Ireland at the time. And because of its size, the grant at that stage was something like 25,000, which was considerable money. And they were in danger of not getting that if they didn't have an appointed training manager and a proper training plan for the whole company. So my job when I went in was to be a training manager and then draw up the training plan.
All right. Now, can you take me through that phase of your life? What did you do?
What did I do? I discovered very quickly that because of the highly organised union situation in Clondalkin paper mills, and a mistake that had been made by the then training authority, training in Clondalkin paper mills was negotiable. And it came about because somebody from the training authority had gone in to inspect Clondalkin paper mills. They arrived down on the floor, were there a very short time when they were approached by the shop steward, who sort of said, "What are you doing here?" And they said, "We are from the training authority. Oh, what are you doing? We are looking at the possibility here of putting in a proper training plan, and why would you be doing that? And unfortunately, during the conversation, they mentioned the two words, increased productivity, to which they were told to remove themselves from the floor within 5 minutes or the whole place would stop.
Why? Was this because of unions?
Yeah.
What unions?
Within there was a print union, and there was the, what would it then be? It would have been, now would be Irish Transport. It would be Irish Transport. But it was, I think at that stage, the Workers' Union of Ireland was still in there. They hadn't merged.
Mm-hmm.
But they were very strong in there, and that was it. Now, as far as that was concerned, I was not enabled to go down and talk to people about what their training needs were. And I will now admit that after the first year I was there, I was happily told the grant has been paid. And I said, that's great, because I had drawn up a training plan for everybody in the company without talking to any of them.
I see.
I looked at it and from my experience said, there is a department. The training needs in that department would be X, Y, and Z. The age group in that department is A, B, and C. Therefore, there are people in there who, should, to be properly trained, should learn about all these other things. And I wrote a training plan. Now, there was nothing wrong with that. It's just that we were never going to do it. Now, the grant mechanism said you had to draw up a training plan, but it never said you had to do any of the training.
But is it, was that a waste of time then? You know, when you do...
No, I wouldn't think it was a waste of time. What we did get out of it was I got to do some quite good supervisory training.
Yes.
And also, what I did do, I got out of it, I got the sales people trained, because I found there were salesmen outselling paper who knew nothing about making paper.
Yeah.
And I thought that if they knew something about how paper was made, they might be better off to go and talk to their customers, at least in some sort of knowledgeable way, the printers.
Right. Now, fill me in on who was the management there when you got the job?
The management was the managing director.
In 1974.
It was a man called Dr. Cusick, who had been one of the founders of the company. Clondalkin family, lived across the road from the paper mill, set up the paper mill, I think, in 1939, may have been a bit earlier, but certainly was set up to deal with the situation where Ireland was becoming self-sufficient.
Yes.
And he was a visionary at the time, certainly, and in the Articles of Association of the company, as well as being there to make paper, they also had written into it to provide employment in the Clondalkin area, which was a most unusual thing to be written into the Articles of Association of a company. So that was there as well.
Yes, well, I'm interviewing you here in the National Library, and directly outside the window is a protest. Now, that prompts the next question. I'm sure there were a lot of protests and strikes that happened.
Well, I was in there as training manager, and I was there, I think, 2 years, when there was a 9-week strike in Clondalkin paper mills.
Yeah. Imagine. That would break any company, 9 weeks out of work.
Yeah, and it would break a lot of unions as well.
But what was the strike over?
I think it was a straightforward one over pay. But as I say, I was in training. I was being purposely kept out of industrial negotiations. Although the then personnel manager, who was an engineer who had been found himself in the job, used to come and talk to me, because I was a trained, experienced personnel person. I was a fellow at the Institute of Personnel Management.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of connections through that in other companies. And I was sort of an unofficial person. Because of my position, I could go and talk to people within the company. and sometimes it was sent out, sort of put out to fix things behind the.
And how did you get?
Okay, the nine-week strike. And the man who was in the job is now dead, so I don't want to malign him. But there was an inquiry into the strike afterwards, which the company commissioned, and they got a man called McCarthy from Trinity College to look into the strike, and he interviewed a whole lot of people and came up with a report. And as a result of that, the personnel manager said, or was told, I don't know which, I don't want to do this job anymore, I'd like to go back to being the engineer that I was. And I let it be known that I would be interested in the job because I was a personnel person.
Hmm.
I was on the spot, I got the job.
Oh, and so it,
as personnel manager.
Yes. And so the man that you took the place of...
went back to being an engineer.
An engineer?
There was no row, there was no nothing. He just said... He himself certainly took some responsibility for the strike having happened.
What's his name?
His name was Jim Kelly. He's dead now.
Yeah.
I don't want... And he did his... I'd say he did his best.
Okay.
He did his best, but things were against him. He was an engineer.
And then, so was it very difficult with the management there?
Yeah, it was very difficult for them. Everything was negotiable, and you couldn't turn around. Now, because at a time, and there were a lot of companies in Ireland like it, during the late 1940s and the 1950s, there was a lot of protection in here for a lot of companies. They had a monopoly. Their sales were good, their profits were good, provided they kept going.
Yeah.
And very often the answer to a lot of problems was throw money at it.
Okay.
And that meant things got out of control.
And did you see the expansion of the company in your time?
No, I saw the contraction of it while I was there. When I went into it, there was Clondalkin Paper Mills, which was the parent company, but there was also the Clondalkin Group, which owned the plastic bagpack factory next door to them. They owned Bailey Gibson's, the printers, Cahill's, the printers. They had a printing company in Cork. They had another one called the Dublin Print Company at the back of Amiens Street Station. They had, what else had they? They had paper wholesaler somewhere. But they had vertically integrated. I mean, paper is made of water and wood. They didn't own the forests, but they had their own plant where they bought in the logs and turned them into pulp. And they owned a lake in Blessington, which was their water supply. And they had a water bailiff on the books. It was his job was to keep the waterway down to the mill clear, and it flowed in the back at Clondalkin from the lake, just British Ponds it's called, and that flowed down through Saggart, where there was another paper mill originally, which Clondalkin had bought and closed, and then it flowed down into Clondalkin, where they used the water in the paper mill. The paper mill used a lot of water. And that went out and into the River Poddle, which flowed beside the canal. And that flowed down then through Drimna, where there was originally another paper mill, which Clondalkin had bought. And Drimna paper mill was a small paper mill. But within Clondalkin paper mills, there were actually three groups of people. There were the original Clondalkin people who worked at two of the main paper-making machines. There were the people from Drimna who worked a smaller paper machine that had been moved from there. And the people who packed it and sent it out were nearly all people who came from Saggart.
Really?
And they would not interchange between each other.
Why?
Don't know. Just the way it grew up. The Clondalkin people, too. There were two paper machines. And they ran around the clock.
Mm.
But if, for example, people were out on one of the paper machines. And people were out on two of the paper machines, and between them you had only enough people in to work one of the machines. You couldn't move them across and run one machine. You had to send out for the next shift and give them an extra shift's pay. And people were working it extremely well, but although they were supposed to work five shifts a week, by staying out for one night and being brought in for a double shift on the next day, they only had to get out of bed four times a week instead of five times a week. And it was very much the same thing as was happening in the... And I remember hearing it quoted about the miners in Wales, where there was a large absentee problem, where they were asked, why are you only working 4 days a week? And their answer was, because we can't earn enough in three. So there was a lot of... It had got out of control, there's no doubt about that.